So we'll start. Okay, so here we are. It's hard to whatever, but we'll just learn, bring more light into the world. That's all we can do in this crazy world. And yeah, we should have only good news. That's all. It should only be good news for everybody. Everybody should be safe. Everybody should be well. And that's it. What? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he does not anymore. He's gone. Yeah, they found the body. It's terrible, terrible, terrible. Yeah, yeah. So Hashem has to help. So protect everybody, protect Israel, protect all of us, and we just need Mashiach already. It's enough. That's it. So all we can do is learn. Learning brings light, and we'll see today. I thought we would start the next parsha, but I'm happy that I looked and I saw, no, there's so many beautiful things before we go to the next parsha that I don't want to leave. So a lot of today we won't really look. I know you have a booklet in front of you. We'll do a few of the Rashis, but mainly it'll be a more oral because this is the last section in Parshas Pinchas. And the last section in Parshas Pinchas, as we were saying last time, is a topic that we many times gloss over because it's sometimes a bit technical. It's the sacrifices. But we did mention that the first section of sacrifices it talks about is the Korban Tamid, those sacrifices that are brought every single day on behalf of the entire Jewish people every morning and every evening. And we went a little bit into that last week. I just want to touch on one thing. But then after that, it goes through all of the Korbanis, all the sacrifices that they bring throughout the year on the special Yomim Tovim, and specifically the sacrifices which we call the Musaf sacrifices, which are the extra ones that are brought in honor of Reish Shabbos, Reish Chodesh, Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot, and Shmini Atzeres, and actually Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot, and Shmini Atzeres. So we're going to see a few very nice ideas about all of these different things that come through these psukim, just a few concepts which we live with, even though we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And for us, Yontif doesn't really have that much of a connection to sacrifices. There's no connection. The only connection that we do have is that we say it in davening, and we have that extra tefillah that we call musaf, which is obviously corresponding to those sacrifices that were specifically brought on those days. But we'll see, there are so many beautiful lessons. That's why I didn't want to leave it. So just before we go into the sacrifices of the Yontifs, just to come back for 1 second to the sacrifice of the Korban Tamid that we did speak a lot about last week. So last week we mentioned this Korban Tamid that is brought every single day, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. We said it was a communal offering in the sense that it was really brought for every individual, but not every individual came to the Beis HaMikdash to bring it, right? The lamb that was brought, that was sacrificed, was on behalf of everybody in the entire Jewish people. And we used to give, do you remember how we talk about the Machtzah Shekel? Even in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they would give a half a shekel in the month of Adar. And part of that money was towards this carbon, so therefore we had a part. Everybody had a part in the carbon. Now, very interesting thing. Why in the morning and the afternoon? So we mentioned a few things, but just the important thing it says is that the morning sacrifice atones for all the sins that somebody might have done the previous night, and the afternoon sacrifice atones for all the sins that we might have done throughout that day. What happened during that sacrifice? Since that sacrifice is really brought on behalf of the entire Jewish people, something very interesting happened there. It was only one that was brought, so the Jewish people didn't all come, right? Not every Jew came. It was done just one. And yet, how did we participate? So besides the fact that our money went towards it, there's another way that we participated. So it's just a very interesting thing that it explains. That when, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there was very fascinating how they used to run it. Because, like, technically speaking, you know, there are many Kohanim, there are many Levim. The Kohanim were the ones that actually did the service. Of course, the Levim would accompany, they would help, and they would sing. But how do you decide who's going to be in the Beis HaMikdash? So, you know, there were these groups that they were divided into, and the Kohanim were divided into 24 groups. I think they served for about 2 weeks a year, and the Levium were divided into 24 groups. But what some people are not aware of is that even the Yisraelim were also divided. And that's, we say Yisrael b'ma'amodam, the ma'amid it's called. It's also a representative. And how it worked was, the Kohanim and the Levium lived all over the land of Israel. And when it was their turn, they would travel to Jerusalem, and they would serve for that week or two that they had to serve. But the Yisraelim that were chosen to be there as representatives mainly were chosen from the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And in Jerusalem itself, there were 24 groups, and they would take turns, and they really didn't do that much. All they would do was go and, so to speak, observe and be there as a representative, like, as so to speak, for all the Jewish people. So when the korban was being brought, those members in the city of Yerushalayim would go up, and they would be representing all the Jews all over, and this korban was brought on their behalf, so to speak. But a fascinating thing that I saw that was very interesting was, at the same time that these Jews were there, these 24 groups of Jews that were in Jerusalem used to go up, like, so whatever it was for the week that they went up, there was also 24 groups that were spread all over Israel. And what was the idea? What did they do? So at the times of, I guess, every single day, because every day korbanos were brought, what they would do is, at the same time that the korban would have been brought, so morning time and afternoon time, they would set aside for themselves time where they would, wherever they are, they would, fascinating thing, they would daven. I just want to see how it says. Oh, it says, interesting thing. They would read from the Torah, and I think they would read the parts that talks about the bringing of the sacrifices, and they would daven that Hashem should accept the sacrifices on behalf of the Jewish people. And fascinating, it says that these representatives would also fast for 4 days of the week. Oh, wow. Okay, but I guess it was only once. They would only have a turn, let's say twice a year or something. What was the idea? And a very interesting thing, I once saw this, but I didn't remember this, a very beautiful concept. So they would fast Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. What's the idea? So it says on Monday they would fast to achieve atonement for travelers who voyage the ocean. I guess because that means, because when you're traveling over the ocean, you're in a little bit of danger, and therefore, God forbid, if you have anything that you've done wrong, it could be dangerous for you. So they would have in mind all those who are traveling the ocean. Tuesday, all those who traveled through the deserts, they would have in mind. On Wednesday, they fasted so the little children would not be stricken with a disease called Ascara. Now, of course, we're not sure exactly. Some people say maybe it was what we would call diphtheria, whatever it was. It was an illness that would affect children, and they would fast that the children shouldn't be affected. And on Thursday, specifically, they had in mind that pregnant women shouldn't miscarry. And every single week, there would be somebody fasting on that day and praying for these things so the Jewish people should be safeguarded. Now, why not Friday? Because it's Erev Shabbos. Shabbos, you can't fast. And why not Sunday? Such a beautiful thing. It says that we don't want to go from Shabbos into a fast day. So therefore, Friday, Shabbos, and Sunday, no fasting. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, this group would fast. But of course, also besides for fasting, they would be also having in mind the korban tamid that was brought at that time. They weren't in Jerusalem, they were everywhere else. But it meant that all over Israel, everybody felt the korban that was brought. You know, you had that like connection, so to speak. So it wasn't just done there and that was it. It was done on behalf of everybody, and it would affect and have the power to influence everybody. So no, these were not Kohanim. We're talking about groups, and these were for Yisdafke from the Yisraelim specifically, which is very beautiful because a lot of times we think that as Yisraelim we didn't have a connection, but it shows no. There was also, you know, every Jew had a connection. So they couldn't actually serve in the Beis Hamikdash, but they would do this. So yeah. Specifically, we're talking about Yisraelim. Now, one more beautiful thing that I saw, the Medrash tells us a very nice story. It's actually based on the Zayar. It's a story. It says like this. So this korban tamid, as we said, was brought every single day on behalf to bring atonement, but we also said, we read it last week, the words that were that was used was, it says karbani, it's my Hashem says bring, he says command the Jewish people to bring a sacrifice to me, lachmi li'ishai. Lachmi means my bread. So the question is, what does it mean, my bread? Does Hashem need our bread? Obviously, we don't feed God. So we all know we don't feed God. God's the one that feeds us. But what we understand is that in the merit of the sacrifice, what happens is that we are following Hashem's commands. And what that does is it makes Hashem, as we said, gives him a nachas ruach, like a pleasure, you know, that we're following his commands. And therefore, it makes him give us bread, so to speak, right? Because in the merit of our sacrifice, he supplies the world with all of its sustenance. So the Zohar brings such a very sweet story. It says that there were two great Tanoim, they were walking together, Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yassai. And Rabbi Yassai says, let us occupy ourselves with the study of Torah when we're walking. There's a whole discussion about that, how deeply you should be learning when you're walking, because you have to watch for the dangers of the road and you shouldn't get too involved. So there's all different kinds of things. Some people say to learn something lighter, but you should always occupy yourself in learning. Anyways, it's just interesting, fascinating things. So anyway, so they're talking and they mention, and then they see a Jew who's carrying a child on his shoulder. This is what the Zohar says. And he sits himself down, this Jew, and he puts out like Nebuch, like a pot, you know, like the people who are collecting money, and he puts this child near him. And they go over and they say, you know, they say to themselves, let's at least gain merit. I mean, obviously he needs help. Let us gain merits through him. Let us give him tzedakah and it'll be for our merit. So they go over to him and they ask him, what's wrong? Why did you have to place this jar here? And he explains to them, Nebuch, he says, I've just suffered many misfortunes. I had two sons. They were taken captive, and now what I'm doing is I'm trying actually to follow and to hopefully be able to redeem them. And that's why I put out this thing, and hopefully I'll be able to re-get my two sons. Anyways, they gave him food, and the old Jew expounded a piece of the Torah for them. And he says to them, you know, the Pasuk says, as we were reading, Tzaves b'nei Yisrael, command the Jewish people to bring a sacrifice to me, and it will be a bread, so to speak. It will be a bread for me. So he says, what does it mean? He means that in the merit of our sacrificing to him, he nourishes the world. That's what the Jew told these two rabbis. And he says, our gifts of food open up heavenly wellsprings of nourishment and bring a surplus upon the world. And someone, then he says, and someone who gives tzedakah, because, you know, nowadays we can't give, we don't have this carbon. So how do we gain that Hashem should give nourishment to the world? So he says, when you give tzedakah, you instigate the same thing. You bring about, because you are acting in a way of chesed, so you're instigating that Hashem also acts in a way of chesed to the world and brings nourishment to the world. So then Rabbi Yassai says, oh, that's exactly what the sages meant when they said, don't like look down at any person, because you can gain from every person. Look, we thought we went to help him, and look, he taught us such a beautiful piece of Torah. Anyways, the idea being, when we say karbani lachmi li'ishai, obviously Hashem doesn't need our bread, he doesn't need our carbon. But the idea is that when we bring the carbon, we bring about tremendous brachas for ourselves. And as we know now, either through tzedakah, through davening, through learning Torah, we are able to accomplish a similar kind of thing. So that was, as we say, with the carbon talmud. But then we go, we say an interesting thing. We say, as we have said, that there's this concept of the ma'amadas, and then the psukim continue and they go on. And we have the big question that we asked last week, why we mentioned the sacrifices now, when they had been bringing these sacrifices seemingly throughout the time in the desert, right? So why now? Because the truth is, even though they brought sacrifices in the desert, they didn't bring the carbon musaf in the desert. That was going to start when they entered the land of Israel, which is what they're about to do. And another part is the nisachim, the libations, you know how they used to pour wine, they would also bring, it's interesting, because they would bring like a meal offering with with each of the sacrifices, as well as they would pour over the altar, they would pour wine. We know Sukkot they would pour water, but generally they would pour the wine, and that was done when they entered the land of Israel. And that's why we are repeating these sacrifices now, to give us these new halachas that will apply when they enter the land of Israel. But as we said, it goes in interesting order. So first it mentioned the Karban Tamid, and then it mentions the Musaf of Shabbos. And interestingly, interestingly, with the Musaf of Shabbos that we say every Shabbos, we actually quote from here the pasuk that tells us what they brought, and it says that on Shabbos they offered two lambs as a Musaf offering. And the truth is that two lambs is less, you'll see, than the Yontifs. The Yontifs, they offer cows and bulls and many other things, but on Shabbos only two lambs. So if Shabbos was a bit upset, it says, why I get such a small carbon? And Hashem said to Shabbos, no, don't be upset. There's obviously a very deep connection, because Shabbos is very connected to the number two, and I specifically want that there should be two. So we know Shabbos has the idea of the two portions of man, right? We have the two chalas that sit on our table, the idea of shamar and zachar, the negatives, the things we don't do, and the things that we do on Shabbos. And of course, the main thing of Shabbos is that Shabbos, although it's such a beautiful day of rest and family, and, you know, it's such a wonderful day, but we have to also remember that there's also the spiritual component. So there's the physical beauty of Shabbos as well as the spiritual beauty. And that's the double. And that's the idea of the two lambs that we bring as the Musaf offering of the Shabbos. So that's the Shabbos. Then, after Shabbos, we come to the Rosh Chodesh. And Rosh Chodesh is an interesting one. And I just want to show you on your sheets. Let me see, I'll just share here. I think it's on the first page of your sheets. Let me just see something. Where are we here? Share. Okay. So I want to show you something fascinating with the Rosh Chodesh. If you see on the top of your sheet, it says, "Uberoshei chodeshechem," right on the first of your month, "Takrivu oila laHashem," you shall bring an oila laHashem, which we know a carbon oila is the carbon that goes entirely up to Hashem. "Parim b'nei bakar shnayim," so you bring two young bulls, and then let me just see, v'ayil echad, and one ram, kvasim b'nei shana, shivat mimim, you see how much more? Seven male lambs in their first year, unblemished. And then it tells you about the meal offering in the next pasuk, and I just want to see, so I just want to show you something interesting. If you see right away in pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, uberashei chadsheichem takrivu oila laHashem, carbon oila, for Hashem. Now, I know we look at it, okay, big deal, but if you look at the other sacrifices, it doesn't say that. It just says you bring the carbon. Obviously, it's for Hashem. Who else is it for? Only by Rosh Chodesh, for some reason, does it highlight that who is the carbon going? It's going laHashem. Why? What's unique about Rosh Chodesh that it has to highlight that? What is it trying to make us avoid thinking, so to speak? What might we mistakenly think that if it didn't say Hashem, obviously it's for Hashem? Okay, so I wanted to show you something. If you look at your sheet, so first let me just see if Rashi has something here. Yeah, first I want to see the Rashi. Look at Rashi 14 for a minute. He says like this. This is just interesting about the Rosh Chodesh offering. And it says like this, Rashi 14 says, this is the Ayla Zais, Ayla's Chodesh B'chadshai. So he says, very beautiful, this is just another concept before we get to Hashem. He says, this teaches us, She'im Avar Yoimai, that if its day has passed, Batal Karbanai, its offering is cancelled. V'shuv Ein Loi Tashlumin, and afterwards there's no compensation. This is a very fascinating thing. There's a line in Hebrew that says, Avar Yoimai Batel Karbanai. The day passes, the carbon, you can't bring it anymore. In other words, Rosh Chodesh, we understand. Because if there's a special carbon for Rosh Chodesh, right, and you didn't bring it on Rosh Chodesh, well, if you bring it on another day, well, it's not Rosh Chodesh anymore, right? So it makes sense. But there's a very powerful lesson with this. Because even though in Torah we always talk about how the second chances, you know, that we always talk about Shuvah, and it's true, it's all wonderful. But something we have to remember simultaneously with that, something important, that goes exactly parallel, that although it's all true, the one thing that we really never recapture is time, as we know. Once time passes, it's over. It's gone. It is, as we know, the most precious commodity that we have been given, because it's impossible to reclaim. Impossible. There's just no way. Time just happens once, and that's all. And with the Karbanis, it brings it really home to us. That once the time has passed, there is a certain opportunity that we have at that time, a certain mission or a certain something that we can accomplish. If we haven't, okay, we might do something another time, But that wasn't at that time. So it's something, it's a very powerful lesson that we have to remember. This comes through a very much the concept of Rosh Chodesh, because Rosh Chodesh is the marking of time. And that's why it especially emphasizes it on Rosh Chodesh. It's a time to reflect. We know Erev Rosh Chodesh is considered a mini Yom Kippur. Some people had the custom to even fast on Erev Yom Kippur. Erev Rosh Chodesh. There are people who do that even till today. Because it's like a time of real reflection of like, okay, so the month has passed. The time has passed, and like, what have I done? And, you know, how am I going to do better, so to speak? So the idea of the preciousness and the, as we say, the irreplaceable commodity of time. So that's one important thing. Then, if I want to show you something else interesting, another lesson, and this is going to lead into what? Yes, Riva?
So it says that you should do your Shema before 9:15. What happens as a woman if you don't do it before 9:15?
Do it after. It's fine. 100%. 100%. Just do it. No, it's okay. There are some people who say that we shouldn't daven shacharis in the afternoon, which is probably the best way, is to daven sometime in the morning, but we're not bound by the exact time. That's right. That's exactly right. Yes, thank God is right. Yes.
Because
wake up. That's it, right? That has to be done. That's it. That's it. It's
and
true.
I think it's always the right time.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock.
You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. That's true. No, Rona, you're right. 100%. But that one, it's true. That one's a little bit easier in a way, because it's like you have to do it right away and no preparation, and you just exactly.
What happens if you go back to sleep?
I know. I was going to say maybe you do it again. One time. Okay, there you go. But I don't know, 3 o'clock in the morning, I wouldn't say. Maybe after 5. Okay, let's see number 15. No. That's too early. Okay. So then it says, on the bottom, if you see a number 15, it'll go on to the next page. So it says, you bring Usi'ir Izim. Okay, let me, you know what? I'll just show you in the Pasuk. You bring Si'ir Izim Echad, so one male of the goats. It just keeps talking about the different karbanis of the months. But I'll just show. Let's see the Rashi. So Rashi says, and one male of the goats. So he says, all the he goats, if you go to the next page, we're talking about page number 357 of the Musaf offering. But in Lechaper, they come to atone al tumas mikdash v'kadashav, for the impurity of the Beis HaMikdash and its sacred objects. And I'll tell you what that means in a minute. Hakol k'meisha meferish b'mesechas shvuas. This is all explained in tractate Shavuot. So now what is he asking here? So he's saying, I'm sorry, I'm going to get back to the question we asked before in a minute. Interesting that on Rosh Chodesh, we don't just bring a carbon oila, which is like a carbon that goes up to God, also a carbon chatas. A carbon chatas is a sin offering. So the question is, what are we atoning for? So two things, two different concepts. The one concept, it says, fascinating, is that every Rosh Chodesh, we atone for something that we might not even be aware of. And what is that? So this is not really so connected to us, but I'll show you. If you look on the bottom, number one, do you see that number one on the bottom? It says, interesting, it says, for entering the grounds of the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash in a state of impurity, for eating that which is holy while in a state of impurity, or for eating that which is holy and has become impure, even though the one who eats it is pure. And interesting, it doesn't say when the person is not aware. A person might think they're pure, but not aware that they became impure, and therefore they go to the Beis HaMikdash. So what happens? They don't even know. So what happens is, on Rosh Chodesh, there's a special sacrifice that's brought, and this is to atone for everybody who might have made that mistake. And that's a very beautiful idea that we get that, you know, that opportunity to have that. So that's what happens on Rosh Chodesh. That's the one reason why it's a carbon chatas. But there's another reason that we're going to develop that's actually fascinating, and that's what Rashi continues. What is the connection between Rosh Chodesh and specifically atonement for sins? So he says like this. Let's see where it is. Up on top he says, another thing, v'nishtana se'ir Rosh Chodesh, the he-goat of the first of the month is treated differently. Shenemar bay, as we mentioned before, la Hashem. again, l'lamedcha shek mechaper al she'ein ba yedia. This connects to what we just said. Because you might not even be aware that you weren't pure. Who would be aware? Only Hashem would be aware. That's why it says to Hashem. Because it's sometimes we do things that we don't know we're doing, we're making a mistake. But Hashem knows. So it's okay. Hashem gives us the opportunity to get forgiven. And we shouldn't think we don't have the opportunity now. Because you know, in davening now, in Rosh Chodesh, we have a musaf that we say. And when we say that musaf in davening on Rosh Chodesh, we accomplish the same thing. So it's important for us to remember when we are davening the musaf of Rosh Chodesh, that it covers the things that we might not be aware that we might have done wrong that month. Could be to do with purity and impurity, although that doesn't apply very much nowadays. But it could even be in anything that we might have missed and not realized, whatever it may be. So it's an important one to remember while we daven the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. But let me just see something else very nice. He says like this. No, specifically the Rosh Chodesh Musaf has that power. Yeah, other times has other powers, as we say. Like we say, let's say, on Shabbos, it brings about the holiness of the Shabbos. So it's each time something different. That's what's unique here. That's why each one is different, Chan. It's a good point you're mentioning, because that's why each Musaf has different types of karbanis that are brought, because they each bring about something unique connected to that day. That's what's actually very special about it. Okay, so let's just see quickly a very beautiful idea that he continues and he says another thing. And then he says that it atones for one who doesn't have awareness neither at the beginning nor at the end. And he says, because he says, She'ein makir b'chet, there is none who recognizes the sin, Ela HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'vad, only Hashem alone. And the rest of them, he says, another, and the other he goats are derived from it. Okay, then he says like this. If you look at the Medrash Haggadah, then he says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be, he says, Heviu kapara alai, bring an atonement for me. So now we're talking about a whole different atonement. What's an atonement for me? Why does Hashem need an atonement on Rosh Chodesh? Al shem mi'atati es hayareach, for my having reduced the size of the moon. Okay, so now we come to a whole other part of Rosh Chodesh that we know, yes, a very fascinating thing. What is he saying here? So I want to show you, go to the next page of your booklet, and I'll show you something beautiful. Here he brings it nicely. This is from the Rabbeinu Bechaye. I'll show you something nice. He brings this whole idea in the Medrash. Fascinating concept. So we all know. I'll show you a little bit inside here. Let's see where we'll do from. Some of it we've read, and I'm just going to see. Okay, look. So if you look on the first column, and it's and the word ubiperek elu trefe. So it's this last paragraph on the first column. It says Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi Rami. So Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi Rami says, okay, ksif vayasali kim. We know what happened when Hashem created the world. Hashem created the world, and He created es shnei hama'oireis hagdolim, right? That Hashem made the two big luminaries. That's what it says in the pasuk. Do you remember on the Wednesday? Two big luminaries. And then right afterwards, what does it say? Uksiv, we know this famous thing, es hamar hagadol ves hamar hakatan. He created the big luminary and the small luminary, right? We all know it says He created two big luminaries. Then it says He created the big one and the small one. So the big question, did He create two big ones, or did He create one big one and one small one? It's strange. What's happening over here? So we know the famous story. What? Yeah, this is the famous story that we all learn. It says like this, Amra, so He says, Amra yareach lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The moon says to Hashem, Ribayna shalaylam, efshar l'shnei melachim lishdamesh b'keser echad. Is it possible for two kings to rule with one crown, right? The famous thing. How could you make two kings? It doesn't work. People, you know, we can't get along, can't share. And is there, so he, in other words, shouldn't there be one bigger one and one, you know, one president and one vice? Can't have two presidents, it doesn't work. So he says, what did Hashem do? Amar la Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem says to the moon, L'chi umi'ati es atzmech, make yourself smaller. So this is a fascinating part of the Medrash that I've not really seen. It's not so famous. How does the moon respond to Hashem? It says, Amra lefanav. So the moon says to Hashem, Ribbono shel olam, Bishvil she'amarti lefanecha davar hagun, ama'it es atzmi? Just because I pointed out something correct, I should make myself smaller? It's almost, you know, like a child. It's like, because I, you know, I showed you that you did something wrong. Now I have to suffer? It's like, why should I make myself smaller? You made a mistake. You shouldn't have created us both the same size, so to speak. And it's fascinating how Hashem responds to the moon. So interestingly, the Medrash continues and says, Amarla. So Hashem says, Hashem almost like takes a step back and says, okay, I feel bad. I'm sorry. You still have to make yourself smaller, but I'm going to try to compensate you. And he gives him a few ways that he's going to compensate. So first Hashem says to the moon, Amarla, l'chiyu mishli b'yoyimu b'layla. Don't worry, even if you're smaller, still you should rule by day and by night. So the moon says to Hashem, what are you talking about? Amarle, my revusa shraga b'tihara miyahani. What are you saying? If you take out a flashlight, or let's say if you take a small flame out in the middle of the sun, you don't notice it. So very nice, you're going to tell me to rule by day, but now my light is so much smaller, so I don't make a difference anymore. It doesn't matter if I'm there during the day, nobody's going to notice me. So that's not an appeasement to me. It doesn't matter. That doesn't help me any. The sun is taking over. Okay, Hashem says, okay, no problem. Next, what's the next compensation, so to speak? Amrale, so he says to him, L'chi v'yimnu b'cha Yisrael yamim v'shanim. He says, okay, so you know what? The Jewish people, they will set up their calendar and they will go according to you. They will set up their days and their years according to you. But the moon is still not happy. Why? What kind of calendar do we have? We have a both. We're not just lunar, right? The Muslims, they've got a lunar one. But we go by both, right? Because we have to count the seasons as well. So the moon says, oh, that's very nice. But you know what? That's not true. Because they don't just take me into account. You know, it says in your Torah that certain things have to happen a certain time of the year. So they're going to take the sun into account. So how are you appeasing me? That's not good enough. Even though it's more of a lunar calendar, but nevertheless, it's not just exclusively lunar. So he's not happy. So what does Hashem then say to the moon? It's fascinating. He says to the moon, okay, I hear you. So he says, that's why he says, look, he says, Amra la yayma nami efshar delo manu bay tkufas, right? They count the seasons. As we say, Vahoyu la'isai sulumay adim, uliyamim, vishanim, right? We know that the sun is going to be there for the times of the year that we know, that we have to know what season it is. So therefore Hashem says, Amrula l'chi v'yikru tzadikim al shmecha. Don't worry, I'm going to call my great righteous people on your name. What does that mean? Because you have become smaller. So you are called the small one. So you know what? The tzaddikim will also be called the small one. We say Yaakov HaKatan. Yaakov is the small one, as we know in this week's parasha. Shmuel HaKatan. David HaKatan. Right, David is the youngest. He's the last one. He's the neglected one. He's the small one. So all the great tzaddikim are just like the moon, so to speak. They're the small one. But it says, it still didn't calm the moon down. Wasn't happy. Until, what did Hashem say that did calm the moon down? Amar HaKadosh, if you go to the top, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Heviu Kapara Alai, bring an atonement for me. Shemi Atati Es HaYareach, that I have made the moon smaller. And what is it? He says, V'hainu Da Amar Reish Lakish, Manishtana Seir Shal Reish Chedesh, Shenemar Bai Chatas LaHashem. Because we see by this lamb that they bring on Rish Chodesh, what does it say? That it's a chatas for Hashem. So on Rish Chodesh, we, so to speak, atone for Hashem, specifically Rish Chodesh, for making the moon smaller. And this calmed the moon down. It's a fascinating medrash. Obviously, it needs a bit of understanding. But one thing we do see here, something very fascinating, two beautiful lessons that the Rabbeinu Bachaye shows us. After, he says something beautiful. He says two things. One thing we see, that even though the moon was a little bit out of place and shouldn't have complained, because Hashem knows what it's doing, he has to accept two crowns, for two kings, if Hashem wants, that's possible, if that's how Hashem made it. Even if it's a valid complaint, nevertheless, you have to accept Hashem knows. Nevertheless, after Hashem made the moon smaller, Hashem does care about the dignity of every part of his creation. That's one thing we learn from this Medrash. And Hashem does take into account, obviously the moon doesn't have feelings, what it represents for us, takes into account even the feelings of somebody who perhaps, maybe, spoke out of place, but then because of that lost out, and because of that there will be a discrepancy and an unevenness, and perhaps there will be somebody who will be bigger or more important and somebody less important. Hashem cares that there should be peace and harmony in the world. That's the one thing we learn from here. And that everybody should be happy with, so to speak, their role. The other thing, which is actually very, very beautiful, and that ties in again to this whole concept of chatas, is that we learn from here also that no matter what you do, that if you ask for forgiveness, you gain forgiveness. Meaning to say, the moon spoke out of turn. It shouldn't have said anything. Once it spoke, Hashem said, make yourself smaller. But after that, Hashem said, okay, don't worry, don't worry. There's a special sacrifice, a carbon chatas. Every single month, you will be atoned for, and you will be able to make up, and I will be willing to accept the atonement. In other words, showing us a very powerful lesson that anytime somebody slights us, we shouldn't constantly deflect it on them. Rather, sometimes we can also take a little bit of responsibility. Hashem says, I made the moon smaller, right? Because I made him make himself smaller, and therefore I provide an atonement for him. So in other words, allow ourselves to be appeased. If somebody comes to us after they've done something they shouldn't have done, don't be difficult. Say, no problem, I get it, I get where you come from, and it will try to make amends, so to speak, and be ready and willing to meet them on their terms. And that's a very beautiful lesson that the Rabbeinu Bechaya says you learn specifically from the Chatas of Rosh Chodesh. Such a fascinating thing, I know. It's just a small thing. Just, we learn it just from the fact that you bring a Chatas and it says La Hashem, because it's for God. It's not really not Hashem. Hashem didn't obviously make any mistakes. That's what it says when it says Eli for me. He says not to bring it to me, but Eli, bring it so that you come close to me, that we can become connected again in the full way. And that's what we have to learn. So it's a very, very beautiful idea. And so, yeah, it's amazing. It's just amazing how even that's what I was saying. I thought, oh my gosh, I was going to skip all this, and then I saw this. Wow, that was quite incredible. Yeah. It's so fast. So interesting you say that.
I can see it.
You can see that. That's it. A full moon. But it does say, because a full moon corresponds actually in Torah to the concept of the Jewish people, because we're compared to the moon. So when we are full, when we are complete, like it says that when Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, ruled, that's like the full moon. That's what it says. He was the 15th generation, which is the 15th day of the month when the moon is full. And that's the concept of a fullness, of a complete, yes. So please God, it will be. A full moon is a good thing. But it's interesting that you say you like the moon, because it also says that one of the things it says that Hashem said after the moon complained and the moon made itself smaller, so Hashem said, you know what, moon, you were right. The truth is that it actually is important for the moon to be smaller, because we know that the moon, I don't know science very much, but people who do know that the moon also plays a big role. It has something to do with the waves, it has something to do with a lot of the different parts of how the world works. The moon does affect, obviously everything affects. So it says, had it not done that, there would have been certain parts of the world that perhaps would not have thrived. So therefore also, the positive side of remembering, yeah, what the role of the, even the smaller one, so to speak, the moon. Exact, that's for sure. that's for sure. Yes, okay, that's interesting. No, we don't have. Oh, we do, once in 28 years. Do you remember? Yes, that's when it comes back to the same position.
The
But we have to. But it's interesting, Hannah, you say that, because that's an important thing. We're really not, as we, I know you, we're not really davening to the moon. We're davening to Hashem, who exactly, who has given us. That's right. Exactly. Exactly. I know women don't do that. I don't know. It's funny, but men, yeah, it's an interesting one. Okay. I think one of the reasons is because you. That's it. And we're still here. Exactly. Exactly. And we're still here. Sylvia, you're 100% right. That's another very powerful thing. Just like the moon constantly, it waxes and it wanes. And that's, and we have to always have hope, because we do. And whether we're on the first day of the month, or as Rona says, the 15th, yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. Mirtz Hashem. Get back to its wholeness. Okay. Yes. Okay. So now moving on, a few more minutes. We'll just do a few more beautiful ideas, because after the Rosh Chodesh, we come, as we said, to the holidays. Okay. So now each of the holidays also, there's so many beautiful things that we learn. Let me just see in the sheet in front of you, because the next one that it talks about, because it goes in the order of the calendar, the Jewish calendar goes from Nisan, so Pesach. It mentions the Yontif of Pesach. Obviously, after Pesach is Shavuos, and after Shavuos comes Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot, I think it mentions, because the special karbanis of all of those Yom Tovim actually mentions Yom Kippur as well. But just interesting thing, I'm going to see on page 358 of your booklet, I just want to show you something nice, just two more nice things, and I think we'll continue a little bit more next week, because just don't want to, there's such a beautiful idea that I wanted to show you, we'll do next week, actually it's coming closer, next week is perfect, because next week is Rosh Chodesh, yes, that's right. I just want to tell you something very nice, there's a beautiful thing that we'll see next week, the comparison between Sukkot and Chanukah. We'll see next week. Beautiful. Everything is all connected. Everything is Hashgacha Pratis. It's unbelievable. But we'll do that next week, because it's a whole thing. But today I just want to show you two beautiful things. If you look at the one from Pesach, so it says that on Pesach, the 15th day of the month of Nisan, I mean, it doesn't say Nisan, but of this month, of the first month, we say we eat matzis. And then on that day, you don't do work. And then also, which carbon do you bring? So if you look into Pasuk Yutes, it says, V'kraftem isha la'ilal Hashem parim b'nei bakar shnayim, right? So we bring two young bulls, and then v'ayelechad on one ram, and then v'shiva kvasim, I think, and seven male lambs. So just don't go to the next page. Stay on this page. I want to show you something. Rashi tells us something interesting. Why these different type of sacrifices? Everything is significant. So it says, the Purim, the bulls, are keneged Avraham. They correspond to Avraham. What does Avraham have to do with bulls? So if you look at the pasuk, as Rashi brings, it says, ve'el habakar rots Avraham. Avraham ran to the cattle. That was just 2 weeks ago. Remember when the guests came after his bris milah, and he wanted to serve them, and he wanted to serve them the tongue. What did he do? He found these bulls, that's what he did, and he shechted them. So it says, actually, what did he shecht? He shechted bulls, Purim. So Purim go corresponding to Avraham. Then it says, what? Why do we bring the ayil, the ram? That's keneged ayil shel Yitzchak, corresponds to the ram of Yitzchak. And because we know that was brought instead of Yitzchak on the Akedah. And the kvasim, the lambs, keneged Yaakov. Why? Because it says, v'hakvasim hifrid Yaakov. You know, that's next week's parashah, parashas Vayetze. When Yaakov worked for Lavan, do you remember he took care of all of his sheep? Oh my gosh, and there was all the spotted and the dotted and the striped and all the different things that he was doing there. He was, besides, he was a shepherd, but he was taking care specifically of Lavan's sheep, and it discusses it a lot. So there's a connection between Yaakov and the sheep. And that's why, what do we do? What are we saying over here? When we bring these sacrifices, we remind, so to speak, Hashem of the merit of the forefathers, and we say to him, even if we don't deserve all the brachas, do it in the merit of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Now, we know an interesting thing. I want to show you, I think it says it on the bottom also here. Yeah, I want to show you something interesting. If you look at number 6 on the bottom. So the sacrifices correspond to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But even the specific Yomim Tovim also do. And there's actually two ways to count it. So I'll show you something. It says like this. Look at number 6. For Reb Moshe HaDarshan, it says like this. Let's see where he says it over here. He says like this. Okay, so there's two bulls, one ram, seven lambs. Rashi's, so he asks an interesting question. First of all, these were also brought on Rosh Chodesh, and yet Rashi doesn't talk about it there. He only talks about it here by Pesach. And why is that? Because Rashi wants to hide. Hopefully it'll be quiet. I didn't silence them. So the Yomim Tovim themselves correspond. That's why. So let's see. Which Yom Tov corresponds to what? So look, I'll show you something. If you look on the top of the second column, it says like this. It's the second column. It says the correspondence between the festivals and the patriarchs are explained actually in the Tor. It's actually interesting in the Halacha. It says like this. Avraham corresponds to Pesach. Why? What's Avraham to do with Pesach? So very interesting, it says, when did the Malachim come to Avraham? It was Pesach. And how do we know? One of the things it says is that Avraham specifically told Sarah to go knead the dough. She made matzah. It wasn't challah, it was matzah. And Dafke, he wanted her because he only trusted her to be careful that it shouldn't become chametz, whatever that means. And she was the one that was going to make the matzah for the angels. So it was Pesach that the angels came. So Avraham has a special connection to the Yontif of Pesach. Obviously, there is a deeper connection. Avraham is chesed, kindness. And we know that when Hashem took us out of Egypt, it was an act of pure kindness. We didn't deserve it. We didn't do anything to merit it. And this is the concept of Pesach. What is the next Yontif? The next big Yontif is Shavuos. Who does that correspond to? So there's two ways. Let's see how he says it here. First, he says that Yitzchak corresponds to Shavuos because when the Torah was given, they blew the shofar, it says, right? And everybody trembled. What do we know? Where did the shofar come from? From that ram. But which ram? It actually says, specifically, the ram that was brought on the Akedah. So one of the shofars was for Matan Torah, and one of the shofars is hiding for Mashiach. That's what it says. So the two shofars that are two horns that are on the ram of Yitzchak on the Akedah are actually specifically, so one is connected to Shavuos and one is connected to the time of Mashiach. So Yitzchak, very connected to Shavuos. What's the connection between Yaakov and Sukkot? So I'll show you something cute. It's actually in next week's parasha, I think. It says, or 2 weeks' time actually, Vayishlach, I think it says. I'll show you. It says like this. It says that what happens with this Yaakov, he traveled and he went to a place called Sukkot. That's one thing it says, and that's sukkah. Or he made sukkahs for his cattle, it says. He actually made these huts for his cattle to have to stay in. Actually, he uses that word. So Yaakov corresponds to sukkahs. But there's another way to say it. Perhaps we can say that Yaakov corresponds to Shavuos, because we know that's this week's parsha. What does it describe Yaakov as in this week's parsha? Yaakov ish tum. He was a simple man. Yoishev Eihalim. He sat in the tents. What did he do? Learn Torah. That's connected to Shavuos. And Yitzchak, we say, perhaps he is the one, as he says, is connected to Sukkot, because Yitzchak, that's very fascinating, that's what we're going to discuss more next week, because it says Yitzchak was brought up as a korban, right, on the Akedah, and Sukkot is the time we bring the most korbanos. We're going to see next week we'll talk about it, in the connection to Chanukah also, that Sukkot, there was a lot more korbanos than on all the other holidays combined. So perhaps Yaakov is Shavuos and Yitzchak is Sukkot, or the other way around, whichever way, but they definitely all correspond to the different Yomim Tovim, and this is also for us to understand. That's why we bring these specific animals on each of the Yomim Tovim, corresponding to each of the forefathers. So it's just a very fascinating idea of a connection. I'm just thinking if there was anything else that I wanted to share before we go further, because next thing, as I say, we're going to see just one more small thing. One more small thing, and then we'll finish. When it comes to the Yontif of Shavuos, there's also an interesting thing, because each of the Yontifs have similar sacrifices, although Sukkot, we'll see, has a whole bunch more, a whole separate thing that we'll talk about next week. But there's something done specially on Shavuos, besides for these special sacrifices. Do you know what's done on Shavuos? We have something extra. Not sacrifice, not animal, but we call it the carbon of the shtei halechem, right? The two breads, so to speak. It's really not like
the cheesecake.
at the cheesecakes, eh? So there's the Bikurim that we bring. But some people say actually that we bring from the first of the wheat, right? That's actually what's brought, the first of the wheat. And after that, you're allowed to bring that wheat, the new crop, to the Beis HaMikdash. But something very interesting, it says that in the merit of the first of the wheat that you bring, Hashem brings bracha into our fruits. But we don't associate wheat with fruits, right? To us, wheat is wheat and fruits is fruits. But it actually says that the truth is that originally in the 6 days of creation, wheat was like a fruit. That's why one of the opinions, I don't know if you know, of what was the fruit that was eaten on the sin of the original sin with Adam and the Nacha and the snake. Do you know what it says? Well, one opinion is it was a grape. One opinion is that it was an esrog. And one opinion actually is that it was a wheat. But wheat is not fruit. But originally it was fruit. When Mashiach will come, it will be restored to that greatness. That wheat will be considered a fruit. Whatever that's supposed to mean, there is something very special about fruit. That's different to wheat. It's more like a staple. And fruit is a pleasurable luxury, right? As we know, with pleasure and with sweetness and with something. But it's something going to happen to it. But fascinating thing it says. What did they used to do? So it's actually beautiful what they would do. They would actually prepare two loaves from the new wheat. And it says that they would, fascinating, the wheat was threshed and ground and sifted 12 times to get the purest flour. This was all done in the Beis HaMikdash. And each loaf was made from one omer, which means from 5 pounds, which is about 2.2 kilos of flour, each of the two loaves. So they were very big loaves. That's how they were made. Then they were waved, it says. They would bring all the different sacrifices, and then they would wave the two loaves, and then they were given to the Kohen Gadol, and one of them, and the other one was given to the Kohanim that were on duty, and they would eat them on the day of Shavuos and the next night. That was what was done with these two special loaves. And it's actually interesting that it's the only time of the year that chametz is brought in the Beis HaMikdash. The rest of the time, when we talk about the showbreads, they were more like matzah. This is the only time that we have a real challah being brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And there's a whole discussion because we know that Shavuos is the completion of the journey of leaving Egypt. This is the famous idea that we'll finish with. When they left Egypt, they were on a very low level. They were sunken into the 49th level of impurity. And therefore, they could have zero chametz. We know chametz represents the idea of arrogance, but also a sense of ego. Arrogance is not a good thing, but a sense of self, you have to have a little bit, right? Except for if you're not doing well, right? If a person is sunken into the 49th level of impurity, then every part of yourself is not pure, right, yet. But when you go through the journey of the 49 days of counting the Omer, and you work on yourself, then you reach a level where you're able to bring you in your whole self into the Beis HaMikdash, which means you're able to bring your abilities, your talents, your uniqueness, and all of that you serve to Hashem. You don't, so to speak, just negate yourself, but you bring yourself who you are. And that's really what Hashem wants. That's the ideal. And that's what's brought on Shavuos. So Shavuos is this, if you want to say, the height, if you want to say when we've elevated ourselves and we could actually bring challah into the Beis HaMikdash, which has a little bit of growth, if you want to say, but the growth doesn't deter us from serving Hashem, rather it enhances our serving of Hashem. And that's the beauty of those two special Shtei Alechem that we mentioned here. So we'll finish over here for now, but like I say, next week we'll go into the special ones of Sukkot, which we'll see is quite fascinating and what it corresponds to, and we'll see that in Mirtz Hashem next week. Yes.